If you wind the clock back, just a few decades, figuring out where to park your money was actually a remarkably quiet thing, like almost a passive endeavor for most people.
Oh, absolutely. It was very predetermined.
Right. The financial universe for the average person was essentially the set track. You bought your standard blue chip stocks. Maybe you laddered some government bonds to, offset the volatility, and then you just let time do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, the architecture of wealth building back then was rigid, but I mean, it was highly predictable.
Extremely predictable. But fast forward to right now, and the sheer velocity of the modern market has, well, it's completely obliterated that old model.
Completely.
You open any terminal or financial app today, and you aren't just looking at stocks anymore. You're navigating fractionalized real estate in emerging markets, or decentralized finance protocols, sovereign debt yields, AI-driven tech syndicates. I mean, the democratization of finance is incredible, but
But it creates a massive paradox of choice.
yes. Exactly, this paralyzing paradox of choice. So you're left staring at this chaotic dashboard, trying to run these complex risk calculations in your head, just to answer one deceptively simple question, which is, what is actually the best thing to invest your money in?
Honestly, that is the defining financial dilemma of our era. Because, the friction of investing has basically dropped to zero. But the cognitive load required to make an informed decision, that has skyrocketed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We are operating in this environment where algorithmic high-frequency trading and massive macroeconomic shifts can literally reprice an entire asset class in an afternoon.
Which is terrifying,
Right.
honestly.
So when the variables are constantly moving like that, attempting to isolate one single universally superior investment vehicle isn't just difficult. It's a mathematical impossibility.
Which brings us perfectly to the core mission of today's deep dive. We are looking at a highly technical, incredibly comprehensive piece of source material today, which is the ultimate guide to strategic and Sharia-compliant investing. And our objective here is to cut through all that noise of the financial dashboard and help you map out an actual framework for deploying your capital.
And what's interesting is the text immediately forces a structural pivot in how we approach that objective.
Excellent.
It basically rejects the premise of your question entirely.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because the source material opens with a pretty definitive thesis, right? It states that searching for a universal best asset is fundamentally flawed.
Right. It doesn't exist.
The optimal allocation of your capital is essentially a dynamic equation, and the output is entirely dependent on three interlocking variables. So that's your specific timeline, your mathematical tolerance for risk, and your underlying structural values.
And that's a necessary paradigm shift. Because if you don't define the parameters of that equation first, you're just throwing capital at the wall. And the modern market is way too ruthless for that. We are witnessing rapid technological shifts occurring right alongside this massive global reallocation of capital toward ethical and sustainable frameworks. So you can't just buy an index and fall asleep anymore.
Right. You have to actively understand the mechanics of these instruments so you can align them with your specific situation. So let's start with the first variable, which is the time horizon. Because before we get into the actual vehicles, like the equities or the bonds, we have to define the rules of the game based on when you actually need the money.
Exactly, the liquidity constraints.
Right. And the guide draws a very rigid line in the sand at the 5-year mark, basically separating capital preservation from capital appreciation. Now, historically, I know wealth managers use 5 years as a sort of rule of thumb, but there is an actual mathematical mechanism behind that specific time frame, isn't there?
There is, yeah. That 5-year threshold isn't just arbitrary. It's deeply rooted in the statistical probability of market recoveries.
Okay.
So when we look at historical volatility data, equity markets frequently experience severe drawdowns, 20, 30% corrections.
Which hurts to look at.
It does.
Yeah.
But if you're a liquidity event, meaning the moment you actually need to convert those assets back into cash to buy a house or a car or whatever,
Right.
if that is less than 5 years away, the statistical probability that market will have fully recovered from a random shock is just too low.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you are exposing yourself to what we call sequence of returns risk. If you are forced to liquidate a position during a market trough just because you need to fund a short-term goal, you have fundamentally destroyed your capital base.
So for anything under 5 years, the mandate is strictly liquidity and preservation. You sacrifice high yields to eliminate that sequence of returns risk. So that means utilizing high-yield savings accounts or money market funds where your principal is mathematically insulated from the stock market going up and down.
Precisely. You don't gamble with the emergency fund. But once a goal is pushed beyond that 5-year horizon, say a university fund or a 20-year retirement target, the constraints totally flip.
Because you have the luxury of time.
Exactly. The longer the timeline, the more volatility your portfolio can computationally absorb. Time acts as this incredible shock absorber for risk. Over a 20-year horizon, a 30% market correction isn't a catastrophe. It's just a standard deviation on the chart.
Right.
And that extended duration is what allows you to move out on the risk curve into equities or mutual funds or real estate, capturing the higher risk premium those assets demand.
Which brings us to the actual execution of buying those assets. And this is where the text tackles market volatility head on. It focuses heavily on the concept of dollar cost averaging, or DCA.
Crucial concept.
Right. Now, we all know the basic premise of DCA, which is deploying capital in small fixed increments over time rather than just dropping a huge lump sum all at once. But in the context of today's hyper-financialized markets, the guide positions DCA as much more than just a good habit. It's framed as a defense mechanism.
Because trying to find the absolute bottom of a market dip, you know, trying to time a lump sum entry perfectly, requires you to outcompute institutional algorithms that are processing global data in microseconds.
Right, which you aren't going to do.
Exactly. Retail investors who attempt to front run those algorithms almost universally destroy their own returns.
I was actually thinking about the mechanics of this, and rather than the old cliche of, you know, steady drops of water in a bucket, actually, let me use a houseplant analogy.
I like analogies.
So dollar cost averaging is basically like watering a houseplant. If you give it a little water consistently over time, you get a healthy plant. But if you try to dump a month's worth of water on it all at once on a random Tuesday, you'll probably drown it. The market timing fails. So if consistency mitigates market volatility like that, does that mean trying to perfectly time the market is essentially a fool's errand?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because time and consistency act as those shock absorbers.
Yeah.
Mathematically smoothing out the bumps over a long horizon. You are mechanically buying more units when the asset price is cheap and fewer units when it's expensive.
You're forcing your portfolio to buy the dip without actually having to predict the dip.
Exactly. By automating it, you strip the behavioral panic out of the equation. You aren't reacting to the daily news cycle. You are just executing a proven strategy.
So we have the timeline mapped out, and we have the risk mitigated through consistency. But the source material introduces a third equally critical layer before we even look at a specific asset. And this is where the text gets incredibly nuanced, particularly given its focus on the Saudi Arabian context. We have to talk about aligning your wealth with your values, specifically the mechanics of Sharia-compliant investing.
It's a really fascinating sector to analyze because Sharia-compliant finance is fundamentally a macroeconomic risk mitigation tool, even though it is deeply rooted in ethical and religious principles.
Let's drill into that because the foundational rule of Sharia compliance is the absolute prohibition of interest-based earnings.
Right, correct.
So traditional lending, where capital generates returns simply by existing as a debt obligation, that is entirely off the table. The focus shifts entirely to ethical, asset-backed, productive economic activity. The guide highlights Islamic mutual funds, which use strict algorithmic filters to strip out prohibited businesses, and it specifically zeroes in on sukuk.
And this is where the terminology often creates a lot of confusion. Sukuk are universally translated in Western media as, quote, Islamic bonds.
Right, I've seen that everywhere.
But structurally, calling a sukuk a bond is like calling an airplane a really fast car. It completely ignores the underlying physics of the instrument.
Okay, so clarify this for me. So instead of making money simply because you lent someone money, which is how standard interest works, your return is actually tied to how a tangible, real-world asset performs.
That is the exact distinction. The legal framework of a sukuk requires tangible asset backing. You cannot synthesize a return out of thin air just by applying an interest rate to a ledger. The yield generated by a sukuk must come from the actual operational cash flow of a physical productive asset.
Oh, wow. So like what kind of asset?
Well, whether that is commercial rent from a skyscraper or toll revenue from a new highway or even operational output from a hospital.
So it forces a one-to-one relationship between the financial instrument and the physical economy. It grounds it in reality.
Precisely. And if you examine this through the lens of systemic risk, the implications are massive. Think back to the 2008 financial crisis.
Yeah, the housing bubble.
Right. That catastrophic failure was driven by synthetic collateralized debt obligations, Derivatives, layered upon derivatives, where the financial instruments became completely detached from the actual value of the underlying real estate.
Just pure debt-based inflation.
Exactly. Sukuk prevents that kind of abstract, highly leveraged speculation. By tying the yield directly to physical asset performance, it inherently caps the leverage ratio. It anchors the financial market to tangible economic reality.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because once the guide establishes this requirement for ethical real-world engines, it finally opens the hood and shows us which specific engines are generating the highest growth right now. It lays out the top five contenders.
And it does so by breaking them down into their distinct macroeconomic functions.
Right. So let's use an analogy here of building a sports team, okay? Because you can't just have all strikers.
No, you'd lose every game.
Exactly. So let's start with the defensive line. The text highlights precious metals, specifically gold and silver. It frames them at a in an era of uncertainty, gold is that absolute baseline defense.
They are the ultimate mitigators. A physical ounce of gold doesn't rely on a corporate earnings report to maintain its intrinsic value.
Right. From there, the guide moves to the midfield, the broad market compounders. The local Tadawul exchange equities in Saudi, global dividend-paying stocks, and mutual funds and REITs. This is perfect for beginners wanting a hands-off experience. You instantly own fractional shares of hundreds of cash-flowing enterprises, capturing that built-in diversification.
And those vehicles are uniquely efficient at compounding wealth over time.
But then we get to the star strikers, the high-growth vehicles. And this is where the source material points directly to domestic real estate in hotspots like Riyadh, Neom, and Jeddah, along with tech and innovation, so AI, clean energy, things like that.
What's fascinating here is the sheer velocity of the macroeconomic catalyst driving these specific sectors.
You mean Vision 2030.
Exactly. The guide explicitly links the viability of these assets to the Saudi Vision 2030 initiative. This isn't just organic cyclical market growth. We are analyzing a deliberate state-engineered pivot. The economic trends are actively being influenced to shift the national engine away from oil and aggressively toward technology, green energy, and infrastructure.
And understanding that capital flow is vital for your portfolio. When a government commits to building smart city infrastructure and subsidizing AI research, it fundamentally alters the risk for private investors. You are aligning your personal capital with the most powerful economic current in the region.
Right. It creates an economic slipstream that you can ride.
So we have the complete sports team. We have the defensive metals guarding against inflation, the broad mutual funds compounding steadily, and the high growth tech and real estate vehicles riding the Vision 2030 slipstream. But simply having a buffet of options doesn't guarantee a return. How do you manage them without losing your mind? The final section focuses on diversification and discipline.
Because a static portfolio in a dynamic environment is, well, it's a decaying portfolio.
Right, but this is exactly where I found a seeming contradiction in the source text, and I want to push back on it.
Okay, let's hear it.
So the guide is incredibly emphatic about discipline. It says we shouldn't panic or make emotional decisions when the market dips. Trust your dollar cost averaging, right?
Which is mathematically sound advice.
Agreed. But then, almost immediately afterward, the text explicitly says that if an investment is underperforming, we should reassess and move on. So how are you supposed to know the difference between a temporary dip you should ignore and a prolonged downturn you need to abandon?
That is a great question. And honestly, it's the ultimate test of financial literacy. The difference comes down to isolating the variable that caused the price action. Are you reacting emotionally to noise, or are you strategically reassessing a permanent shift?
Walk me through that distinction.
Let's say you hold an Islamic global tech fund. Suddenly, a macroeconomic event happens somewhere in the world. Algorithmic trading desks indiscriminate sell-off assets, and your fund drops by 15% in a week.
Okay, panic time.
No, exactly the opposite. That is an emotional reaction. The underlying companies in your fund, their revenue models, their patents, they haven't materially changed. The market is just experiencing a systemic repricing. If you sell then, you're reacting to a red line on a chart. You just let the dollar cost averaging keep spinning.
Because the underlying trend hasn't broken.
Exactly. But a strategic reassessment is when you realize the underlying economic trend of a specific sector has permanently shifted, making it dead weight.
Like what?
Well, take traditional corporate office real estate post-2020. If the global economy permanently adopts remote work protocols, that is not a temporary dip. That is a permanent paradigm shift in demand. The foundational thesis for why that asset generated cash flow is no longer valid. Recognizing that and moving your capital into expanding centers like data centers, that is strategic reassessment.
Ah, okay. You have to look past the price ticker and analyze the underlying mechanics of the business itself.
And realistically, executing that level of analysis is incredibly difficult for an individual. This is why the guide points toward working with experts and sophisticated platforms like Osol Gamma.
Right, because they provide tailored strategies.
Exactly. They provide a transparent, data-driven framework that blends deep, localized knowledge of the Saudi market with global perspectives, ensuring the portfolio is optimized while remaining Islamic-aligned. They act as the analytical layer, separating the market noise from the actual structural signals.
So what does this all mean? We started this deep dive staring at the overwhelming chaos of a modern financial dashboard, asking, what is the best thing to invest your money in? And what this guide proves is that the ultimate answer isn't a secret stock symbol. It's a well-researched, diversified portfolio that perfectly mirrors your own timeline, your risk appetite, and your personal values.
It is about building an architecture for your wealth that can withstand shocks, but is agile enough to capture growth. But, you know, analyzing the sheer scale of the capital reallocation happening right now raises a really profound question.
Oh, I am always here for a provocative final thought. Where are we heading?
Well, think about it. If massive initiatives like Saudi's Vision 2030 are successfully shifting the economic foundation from legacy oil to artificial intelligence and green energy, how will our definition of a safe investment change in the next 20 years?
Oh, wow. That completely flips the board.
Right. Will the risky, volatile tech innovations of today become the boring, rock-solid conservative investments of tomorrow? And conversely, will legacy tangible assets become the highly speculative risks? It's an evolutionary shift in how we define a safe haven, and it's something for you to ponder as you look at your own portfolio.
That is an incredibly powerful lens to view the market through. The definition of safe is changing in real time. Well, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us as we explore the intricate mechanics of this ultimate guide. The next time you open your financial app and feel the weight of that paradox of choice, hopefully you have a clearer framework to cut through the algorithms and build a strategy that works for you.
Stay analytical and keep your investments aligned with your vision.